Well, thanks to the caller before the top of the hour, I was prompted to look up the story in Wired magazine about this giant new NSA facility that they are building, in fact, in the heart of Mormon country. But there really isn't anything here about the Mormons being in charge of it. In fact, I really can't, I can find people who are guessing at that, but you know, like I said, I have a lot of friends who are LDS and they get blamed for a lot of things. They're always kind of telling me a little bit more about what it's like to be Mormon in America. So I'm going to pass on the idea that this is controlled by the Mormon Church, but it is sure is interesting that this giant facility, it will be right near one of the nation's largest sects of polygamists. You know, one of these splinter groups from the LDS. The Brethren's complex isn't that far away from this, but this new facility, this is amazing. And he sure is right. They will be planning to capture everything they can in sort of a new central location for the NSA, which found itself with very, very deep pockets after 9/11 and our desire to feel safe again. They have benefited from that in a big way for these type of capital expenditures and other programs that we're wise to keep an eye on. And I hope there's as much oversight as there needs to be on this, if not from Congress, at least here on the radio. Coming up tomorrow, we'll be talking about another group often maligned, the Puritans of early America. And maybe that the Puritans, we kind of owe them a big apology. We'll talk about the real truth behind the Salem witch trials coming up tomorrow night when I'm back on Coast to Coast. And in the meantime, it's open lines for the rest of this hour. We'll get to everybody lining up right now on Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. Let's pick up where we left off. We've got Joy in Santa Cruz, California, standing by west of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM. Joy?
Hey there.
Hey.
I hope you're having a good evening.
I'm having a blast. Somebody asked me the other day on Twitter whether I like doing open lines, and I said to me it's like batting practice. I just feel like I'm sitting here in the batter's box, and people are pitching at me, and I love it. So I love this part of the show.
Okay, well, I just want to tell you two things before I get to what I wanted to share.
Okay.
One, I have tinnitus now, so I'm starting to
Sorry.
wonder why. And two, I'm a witch, so if you want to ever ask me anything about witchcraft, I'll be happy to tell you anything I know.
Well, you know, it's interesting about what we'll be talking about tomorrow night is even perhaps your definition of witch might be challenged by what actually happened in Salem. And the really good research that this professor did really kind of just inverts the whole understanding of what happened. And I think you'll enjoy the show tomorrow night. But
Well, I hope so because,
I know you're one of the good ones, right?
oh yeah, I mean it's basically a philosophy of care and compassion to other people and creating a better world. That's all it is, really.
Do you ever say it for shock value?
No, not now. Not after 32 years of being a witch.
All right, I wait. I'm gonna. I then I will. Let me push back on that. So, when you were younger,
Yeah.
did you ever say that for shock value?
Probably.
Yeah,
But,
this may be part of the story tomorrow night. It's interesting.
well, you know, if you want to ask me anything, I'll leave my.
Oh, I appreciate that. I don't. I mean, there's no. I'm not in the dark
I was
on
actually with
Wicca.
one of the original neo-pagan churches.
Really?
Yeah.
What would that? Which one was the original or one of the originals?
Church of All Worlds.
Okay.
We were established in 1969.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, yeah, and so did you have famous members
Yes.
like I've like Hollywood celebrity types?
Oh, we never got famous. But we were established.
Interesting. Because I know
Just look
that.
up the Church of All Worlds.
Okay, I'll do that. And you had a question you want to get to?
I wanted to share something with people because I have joint pain.
Yep.
I'm getting older. I have arthritic issues. And I wanted to tell people about CBD.
Oh, yeah.
Can cannabidiol, which is non-psychoactive hemp cream.
Right. You like the topical kind as opposed to the one that one ingests.
Exactly.
Right.
And it works.
I hear that.
It really, really works, especially if you have, like, some kind of a menthol in it so that it can penetrate into the skin.
Yeah, well, like any kind of topical cannabinoid oil, as I understand it, like capsaicin, like any other type of, you know, homeopathic cure.
It works better than capsaicin, I have to tell you.
What's interesting is that what I've read is that it takes several applications to get it to start to really make the impact that it can, and that the best success from people who have tried it that I know personally is that they both tried an external treatment and they took the capsules of CBD oil at the same time. And they felt that was
try that too.
Yeah, because it's really the internal thing. It's kind of the same thing the way it works on the outside. And so it takes a little while for it to start to metabolize in your system. Mm-hmm. But particularly when it comes to joint pain and sleeping issues, it's supposed to be very productive. So I would recommend it. And there's a whole company, you know, there's a bunch of different companies that are doing that for dogs.
Animals?
Yeah, giving CBD oil to arthritic animals. Putting it in their food, and you have to get the right weight, you know, percentages down and that kind of thing. But if you go online and you look up CBD oil for pets, both for elderly cats and dogs, and also for anxiety, pets who have a lot of anxiety and they're always crying when you walk out of the room, the CBD oil is supposed.
People who have anxiety.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? So yeah, all in all, good. Great stuff. I hope you enjoyed tomorrow night's show. Always nice to talk. Let me get to Denise, who's in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, on a first-time caller line on Coast to Coast. Denise?
Hey, what's up?
How are you?
How you doing?
I couldn't be better.
On the air. Kind
yeah,
freaking
it's fun.
Out.
so don't get freaked out.
I was freaked out more last night. Listening, you know, in for the last few nights has been wonderful. Me and my pups come out here and we hang out. Last night was the first night I ever got spooked. I didn't even turn on the radio yet. Settled the animals in. My dog El Nino and Sunny Lightfoot sitting in the passenger seat. Also reacted to it. I heard a disembodied voice speaking and it was like just, you know, carrying on a conversation. And like I turn on the radio. As the dogs react, I freaked out, you know. I was like, ooh, whatever that is. I'm going to turn on the radio now. And I turn it on, and it's the same voice. So I wanted to say that. Plus, you know, like, I don't really know what that is, if you know.
Yeah. So was it the disembodied voice of George Norrie? Or was it the guest he had on? Or
was it the guest.
Hmm.
And the guest was, I don't even remember what he was speaking about, but it gave me a vibe like he was coming through before I turned on the radio. It was very strange. And the dogs reacting, you know, you look for reactions on videos. I looked at the dogs first. And they
What did El Nino say?
El Nino is a speaker. He likes to say, Baru, and I love you. And so he was in shock. He didn't even say anything. Poor baby. So we got in the car. I don't even know what this show was about.
Yeah, I think that's a very effective coast to coast is whenever you can ever have those moments. Good. Well, I wish you many more of them, actually.
Thanks, and there will be. I'm a big fan now. I also wanted to say this. You, the guest you had before just now speaking about the entities and things like that. In the whatever they're building out there in the Midwest. Well, okay, so
In Utah.
Okay, so there's this book called The Entity Phylum, and a guy I know sleeps and goes to these places, and he'll speak out loud and record himself, and he wrote a book called The Entity Phylum, and he just wrote a second book.
Does he have audio?
He does. I think he has a few things. Check out theentityphylum.com on Facebook.
Okay.
He's always posting things in different manners.
I will take a look. I like that thought. Awesome. I appreciate that. Always looking for something new, and hope we have a great night. Be good. Say hi to the dogs. Let's go to Ed in Tulsa on Coast to Coast. Ed's on a wild card line. Ed?
You know, I caught the tail end of a conversation when I first turned the show on. You were talking about people with black eyes. I thought I heard you say the Illuminati and affiliated with CBS, ABC, and people were signing their souls over to Satan.
Well, not quite CBS, ABC. So it was what it, the author of this particular concept, and I say author meaning the woman who is credited with starting it, was right. saying any television anywhere, and she was saying any famous person has to sign their soul away to Satan, and then essentially getting punched in the face, and that's the mark. Yeah.
Well, you know, I ran across some videos on YouTube. I was telling the call screener. And it was labeled Hollywood and Satanic Symbolisms and Illuminati. And I ran across several videos like that where the Illuminati is supposedly behind the scenes pulling the strings on a lot of the programming that you view on mainstream TV. And if you think about it, the Illuminati, they're Luciferians. That's the worship of Satan. Now, if you think about it, a lot of the programming leans towards the dark side. And it's no wonder society is acting so crazy and screwed up because they're looking at this stuff, viewing it day after day on games and on movies. Now, I don't even bother with stuff like that, right? I've got all my TV. I'm a baby boomer. I got all my television programming from the 1960s. I'm caught up in the old 60s and 70s rock and roll, you know. And, yeah, I don't dabble in it much, but I do go to YouTube and do a lot of research. And but that caught my interest when you said that because I thought, man, you got to be kidding. Well, that might explain why people are acting so screwed up right now. Ian,
when was it not true?
People are acting weird, man.
No. To me, it's, you know, I'll draw the line there. I'll just tell you, when was it not true?
When were
we not acting weird?
Well,
when was the last year we had that wasn't weird?
That's true. You got a point. You got an absolute point.
So because I really like what you're saying, but hold on a second. So, like, I look at that in terms of, like, a trajectory, right? So let's go back to the 60s. I just happened to watch, you know, I was watching, I sometimes go back and I watch the early pilots of shows that you and I would have grown up with, right? And the pilots were so bad that I can't even imagine, like, how did they stay on the air before they finally found their groove? And then later on, they got good. But some of those, it just was, and I think what really just came down to is there were just three networks, right? And so it wasn't, they could kind of get away with murder because there was nowhere else where you could go.
That was before cable TV came along.
Right, or satellite or any of the stuff that's online, all the digital stuff. I mean, yeah. I have one TV in my house that can pick up broadcast signals. Otherwise, I don't even watch them.
Right.
And so I think what's interesting to me is to see that I think there's a lot more quality programming today than there was.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm a big fan of, like, I like to go back and watch early episodes of, like, Man from U.N.C.L.E., right? And stuff like that. Totally works for me. But it's interesting to see how some of those other early shows were just, like, My Mother the Car is just a terrible show. I don't care. It's just a terrible show. How did that ever stay on?
That's true. There was a few shows in the 70s that my parents used to watch. Now, in the 70s, I was more into rock and roll and everything.
Right.
But they used to watch all those cop shows, the police shows.
Right. Right?
You know, you had Streets of San Francisco, you had Man.
Right. Right.
Oh, man, Starsky and Hutch, and on and on and on and on. And there was two comedy sitcom shows on during that time that would not even be politically correct. Now, one of them was called Sanford and Son, and the other one was called All in the Family, Archie Bunker. And during the 70s, those were absolutely hilarious shows. But today, I don't even know if you could air those two shows, you know, because they're...
It's an interesting question. But here, okay, so remember All in the Family was a parody of Archie Bunker.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more like maybe how the Colbert Report was, where it was intended to kind of tweak the nose of the Joe Lunchbucket, who had a pronouncement for everything and was willing to always criticize other people and then was very thin-skinned when criticism came back to himself.
Right?
That was the character of Archie Bunker. He's always good. So I think that's what worked, is it was never punching down.
Right.
Right? And I think that's what we always have to, that's what's really important to me on comedy. Are we punching up or are we punching down? Because if somebody's punching up, have at it. Because I think it's always weird. But that's why I don't know. It's like Sanford and Son's a really interesting point. You know that was based on a British show?
I didn't know that. I thought it was just kind of a runoff of All in the Family, only it was just the other culture, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Showing their comedy version of the same basic thing, you know?
Right, and kind of making fun of how the Red Fox character was too set in his ways. He, too, was kind of a loud mouth. I mean, it was sort of, you're right, in the sense he was a little bit of a black Archie Bunker. Right, a little bit, yeah. And yet that was based on a show from England called Steptoe and Son.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And it was about two guys running, you know, a father and son running a garbage reclamation, you know, a junk shop. And I think that part of the gentility of that was always that the person that was saying the ugliest things was also the one that was being made fun of the most.
Right.
And that's so all the characters in Sanford and Son were always mocking Fred to the Fred Sanford character because he was so ridiculous. I think that that kind of cleverness is what is too often missing from
humorous.
Our comedies, right?
It's absolutely humorous. I mean, one of my favorite characters on that show, on the All in the Family, not All in the Family, but on Sanford and Son, was Grady. You know, his buddy Grady.
Right.
You know, I always got a kick out of him, you know.
Well, I will tell you this, and then I'll try and squeeze in somebody in for the bottom of the hour, but I'll tell you when, about 2 years ago, I tweeted out a photo of Let's Make America Grady Again, and I put his photo on that tweet, and I sent it out, because I loved that character, too. I thought he was great. Well, I enjoyed our conversation.
Hey,
I hope you did, too.
I'm an Allman Brothers fan.
Oh, okay.
You can throw any Allman Brothers tunes in there.
All right, well, then I think I know what we'll do with the next bumper coming up, okay? And we'll leave it, so don't go anywhere. Thank you. And let me go to Kevin in Los Angeles on Coast to Coast before we get to the bottom of the hour. Kevin?
Ian, hey, great to talk to you.
Andy.
Been listening since Art Bell and have never called in.
Oh, well, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, you were my favorite guest when you went off the air, and I was listening a few weeks back, however long it was, and I heard your voice, and I'm like,
there you go.
The heavens just opened up and you're there again, and I'm so glad you're back, man.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And I'm a musician. I have played loud music for a long time, and I kind of have a degree of tinnitus, but not, to the degree you have, so I kind of understand that a bit.
I wear what they call musician's headphones a lot. Which are made for musicians with tinnitus. Yeah,
that can't like canceling noise canceling.
Well, they have there's a little bit of a trick to them. They're actually those headphones have an external microphone, which levels out everything to 20 dBs.
Okay.
So if you're playing on a stage, everybody can play as loud as they want, but you'll only hear it at a set level.
Right.
And you can change that level. And that helps because it helps keep the bone rattling nature of that down.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, also I wanted to just say that you were talking with Lauren Weinstein about people that were just having a conversation about something and all of a sudden an ad popped up.
Yeah.
So Jim Church, he's another filling guest on the weekend.
Right, he's great.
He did a whole segment where he had people call in with that exact same issue and all kinds of people were coming out of the woodwork. And he himself had an issue with it and had an experience with it where he was just talking and he didn't type in anything anywhere. And sure enough, it came up to, like ads were coming up
about
what he was talking about,
So. Well, I'm going to look into that for a future show, and I appreciate that. Now, maybe even reach out to Jimmy Church for that, too. You know what, Bumper, we're going to be playing coming up next. Well, at least you know the band. And then we'll take the rest of the open line calls till the top of the hour. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. So thank you so much, everybody. Open lines have been so much fun. We got a little more time left, so we'll get room for you, too. We'll clear out a line, grab a number while you can, and we'll take it up to the top of the hour with your open line comments in whatever direction you want to go. We were talking with Lauren Weinstein earlier, and if you missed that conversation, you can always go back and catch it with Coast Insider. Worth the investment. Tomorrow night's show, definitely plan on this one. First hour, we have a guest talking about police heroes. I won't tell you more about it until we get to tomorrow night, but you got to catch Switching Sides. It will change the way you look at the truth behind the Salem witch trials. That's coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. All right, we'll get Annie in Alabama for a quick minute here on Coast to Coast AM and get everybody in before the top of the hour. Annie?
Hello, Ian. People say that they think that somebody's up to something because I'm able to get through so often. People say that they've tried for 10 years and they can't get through. And they say that somebody's doing something. Well, I tell you what it is. It's telekinesis.
Is that it?
Yes, it is.
You don't think it's just because you call so often?
Well, they try to call often, too. They try hundreds of times. They can't get through.
So how does your telekinesis work that you get through?
Well, sometimes with electronic things, I'm able to do something and accomplish things, however, like that, like a telephone line. However, if it's a digital phone, I've got a landline here, but if it's one of these digital cell phones, like I got the ZTE cell phone, the 233, I think it's called, that thing torments me. It auto-dials, and other people have phones that auto-dial and call people at random in the middle of the night. And when you go on the Internet, you can click onto one thing, and it'll go to another page, and it'll lock you in. If you go to Google, you can just be Googling a song title, and it'll try to force you to buy music. It'll lock you into a page where they've got music for sale, and you can't get out of it unless you rip the battery out of the phone.
Okay. Interesting. Well, do you think that everybody who's a regular caller who always gets through, do they have telekinetic power?
Some of them might have some kind of a gift. I don't know what kind of a gift they've got. I don't know what kind of a gift I've got, but it seems like it must be telekinesis. But with this ZTE phone, I've got no telekinesis with that. The thing will automatically send people emails that don't make any sense. I'll have a file with some drafts that I've been working on, and I can pick the phone up and just touch it, or the wind can just blow. That's all it takes. It's just a breeze, and it'll just start sending people these ridiculous unfinished drafts with all these misspelled words, and the wrong people get it, and I didn't have anything at all to do with sending it to them.
Well, thank you, Annie. I appreciate that. Maybe that explains my wife butt dials me like 5 times a day on her cell phone. So maybe she's got telekinetic power, or maybe her butt does. Let me go to Roscoe, who's in Memphis on Coast to Coast AM. Roscoe?
Thank you for mentioning the Fourth Amendment when you kind of let Mr. Weinstein get away with saying the Constitution does not address privacy. The Fourth Amendment is protection from search, provides security in your person, your property, your papers, and effects. That means privacy. It doesn't use the P word, but it certainly describes it.
But the whole history of the right to privacy has about 120 years of litigation before we get to a concept of the right to privacy. I think the right to not be searched is a different, that was perceived as a very different argument. The idea that searching violated our privacy, that is where the jump is in the courts. That doesn't come until really the beginning of the 20th century.
The concept was clearly laid out in the Fourth Amendment, and all the discussion since is how you are searched. Because you're right about little brothers frittering away these rights by contract. Until now, it's reached a point, if you fly in an airplane, then some government agent with a pension, high school dropout, a drip-dry uniform, and rubber gloves, the same rubber gloves he's worn all day, has his hands in your underpants to check your lumps and contours.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but I think that this is so yes on the idea of it's a series of little brothers as opposed to one central big brother. But I
my point there was when you buy the ticket by country.
Oh, I know. Yeah, you checked the box of I accept. No, I totally get that. Right. But I guess what I'm really when it comes down to say the our concept of privacy and the privilege we think of not having our privacy violated. If we go back 125 years, you and me having this conversation 125 years ago, that would have been totally foreign because it hadn't really been formed yet through the succession of rulings by the Supreme Court. And then the argument that really extrapolated from the existing Bill of Rights a very specific concept of privacy. So
wouldn't have had the means of getting into your information and even ways of imaging your stuff, your property, you inside your clothes.
Right.
That would not have been an issue then, but if somebody had searched you, come into your house and all of that, well, we would have said, hey, I have a right against this.
Well, so, you did have a right against that. You're right.
Right, that's the ways you can be searched is what's constantly changing, and why all the legal discussions. Going clear back to the beginning of radio, you know.
Okay, I'm with you to a point, but remember, like something like HIPAA, right? That's a privacy act, and it's another level of understanding that your health information, your body's weight, your whatever diseases you might have, anything that is not. Just because somebody can have it, like at a hospital file, it doesn't mean they own it. You own it. And that was a breakthrough in the concept of privacy. So I think that's really what Lauren is getting at. It's been an ever-evolving thing. It isn't just you can't put your finger on it in one place in the Constitution and go, that's my right to privacy. It's like Twister. You got to have your fingers in a bunch of different places.
Right. And the nature of that evolution is ways we can be searched and what we naturally give up into the public also. I mean, your address in the phone book 2 generations ago, et cetera.
Right.
But the concept that you do have a right to privacy, they didn't use that word, was there in the beginning in the Fourth Amendment.
Well, okay, so we'll leave it here. I will say that I disagree with that because I mean I've read many books about the development of the right to privacy, and I just think that simplifies it too much. Yes, the reason why it's constitutional is because you can draw a line back to it. But what the difficulty is you can't draw a line from it forward. That came from a series of rulings. So that's where that's the only way I disagree with it. I do think that the seeds for our modern understanding of the right to privacy is definitely there in our Bill of Rights. But they had to be, I'm going to use this really crazy word, they had to be inculcated. The seeds had to grow together. Like you have like two trunks that start to grow together near a fence and they grow up to be one tree. But essentially, it's really two trees that are growing in circles around each other. That's really much more about the right to privacy, I think. Sid is in Abilene, Texas on Coast to Coast AM on the Wild Card Line. Sid?
Hey. I was talking to George Dory one night, and I told him I seen this giant rabbit.
Yeah?
And he said, yeah, the rabbits get big out there in West Texas. But he didn't give me a chance to tell him. I actually saw a giant rabbit.
How big?
It probably stood up probably about 6 or 7 foot.
Wait, and it's from its feet to its haunch, or what, if it were standing up on its back feet?
When it's hunched down and it has its head sticking up in there.
Wow.
That's a big rat. It's 7 foot tall because of his ears, too.
Yeah, that'd be pretty lethal. I mean, they eat like they'd eat you like a carrot.
Yeah, I don't know where it came from, and I didn't understand why we saw it. Me and my brother saw it, and he never talks about it.
Where was it going?
I've always talked about strange things I've seen.
Yeah, but where was it going?
Where was it going?
Yeah.
It was just there, and it was just beating the ground with his mouth, you know, picking up seeds and stuff on the ground.
Yeah.
And his whiskers were twitching and everything, and then he just, me and my brother started talking, so I guess it scared him, and he stood up straight, and he just sit there for, he just sit there looking around.
Sid, you didn't just burp on Coast to Coast AM, did you, Sid?
Sir?
I said, did you just burp?
No, sir.
Okay, you were telling, was that the sound of the rabbit?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was just checking. But are you and your brother the only two people who have seen it?
Yeah, as far as I know.
Okay. All right. Well, it's out there. We'll see if somebody else can confirm it. And thank you, Sid. Let me go to Joseph, who's in Monterey, California, on Coast to Coast AM. Joseph?
Great show. I always try to get through on Friday so I can talk on open lines.
There you
go.
I'm
going to make this quick because you don't have much time. Okay. I've been a healer for over 42 years. I've been meditating for 46 years. I've had a lot of experiences. So when I come out and say something, it's because I've had personal experiences, and I also know other people to do. I also do what you ask other people to do. Do more research,
yep.
Find a good foundation. And what you're saying, yeah. You know, the proof. Everyone who wants proof. Okay, so I'm going to only open one can of worms tonight, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Did you ever hear of spiritual emergence?
I may not, maybe not in the way you're using it. So what do you mean by that?
Spiritual emergence or spiritual emergency, a spiritual crisis. Okay. I will give the people who are listening a little bit of background. And this is for people who are always called paranoid or crazy. Okay. And this is indigenous, and it's also in Western science. There's a person by the name of Dr. Groff, and he does holographic breath work. So you can look up his work online. And there's a book, I forgot the name of the book, but basically it's what the shaman sees when he sees mental health, the mental health industry and mental institutions. Okay.
Okay.
Basically, it's when a person is going through a transition. It's where, now I can't talk for a lot of people in this area, you know, when they're going crazy. It is when the consciousness is being moved into higher frequencies. There's a battle where they try to adjust to these frequencies. Now, in indigenous people, they talk about people, non-physical people who are working to bring these people, the hospitalized people, to a higher state, to a higher frequency. It opens them up. And the indigenous people, like in Africa, they call this the birth of the healer. Understand?
Okay.
They're healers, they're mystics, they get these abilities. Now, I'm not going to say everyone who has abilities or the healers went through this process, but some of the people who are put away in institutions are going through this rites of passage. I call it a rites of passage. It's out there. There's plenty of literature, and there are plenty of people that may come forward and tell you, this is my experience, and this is what I had to go through, and this is what I became from it.
Now, are you a shaman yourself?
I'm a healer. I'm a very advanced healer. I do time travel, spiritual time travel. I take my clients back into their past lives, and we work in their past life to do whatever needs to be done, whether it's relationships, whether it's sickness, anything. And all the things that I've learned as a healer in the present moment, I go into the past and do it there. Now, here's another thing.
I only have about another minute here. I got to get some other callers, but
yes,
let me ask you, how many clients do you have?
In California, I can't find any. In New York, I have plenty.
Interesting.
And we did. Oh, by the way, they do have a psychic fair where I am, and I do the same work with them. And, 10 to 15 people come over, and I do that. And I'm also on YouTube. So, you know, I'm out there, and I do work.
I bet you do. What are you on YouTube? Can I go look at your work on YouTube? What do I look for?
Yes. My name. Well, actually, you search my name on YouTube. And it's not my site. It's a person who does all these films, and you'll have to look up my name.
Okay.
I can leave my name with someone.
I like to see other people. I'll put you on hold right now, and I'm sure Donna will take your name down, and then I can go look at a YouTube video of you doing that. Appreciate that. Let me get to Joanne, who is still in New York. Open lines on Coast to Coast. Joanne?
Yes, good evening. Good morning. I can't believe I got through.
Well, welcome
back to your show, Ian. I'm very glad for you. You know, you're happy to be here. And my call is just going to be very brief and light. You guys were talking about two of my favorite old shows, The Sanford and Son and All in the Family.
Yeah, those are good shows.
And I just wanted to say that is actually on a broadcast channel that is out called Get TV.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a cable channel. It's
Yeah, it comes out of Chicago. It Get TV and Me TV. Yeah.
And people who don't get cable can get it if they scan for it. But I'm actually enjoying those shows now. I just graduated.
Oh, I'm glad you like that. Yeah,
and
I like
so
that.
A lot of stress and all. But anyways, okay. I just wanted to say that. And
oh, it's okay. You know, let me just tell you.
To everybody today. Everyone call me in. Very diverse crowd.
It sure is. One of the best themes of all time was Quincy Jones's theme to Sanford and Son.
Oh, my God. I love that show. My favorite is Aunt Esther. She's my favorite.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she was great. All the ugly jokes about Aunt Esther. That's great. All right. Well, then we just have time for thank you so much. Not far from you is Tom in the Bronx, and he'll wrap things up for us tonight on Coast to Coast AM.
I'd like to say that of all the old-time sitcoms I used to like, it was The Real McCoys, which preceded the Beverly Hillbillies.
With Walter Brennan. Yeah.
And Richard Crenna, which played his son-in-law there on the program.
Sure.
But in other words, The Real McCoys had heart. In other words, Walter Brennan was fantastic for bringing a lot of... He used to talk about the Lord and the good land, you know, farm life.
Yeah.
And he used to put those comments over fantastically well.
He had a great voice. He had just a wonderful speaking voice.
Yeah, I would think that... I always was sad that they never brought the Real McCoys back and mixed them in with the Beverly Hillbillies, so to speak.
Interesting. Well, you hear the music there, so you know what that means for me. So thank you so much for being our capstone. And thank you everybody who is trying to get through but who do not have telekinetic powers to be able to actualize a phone call at will. To all of you who are going to be listening tomorrow night, I just promise you're not going to regret this. You may be challenged. It's hard to imagine that you will have less sympathy for the victims of the Salem witch hunt until you hear the real story of what happened. That's tomorrow night when I come back to do Coast to Coast AM. And also, I want to thank Ted Dan, who did a great job on the music tonight, Donna on the phones, and everybody helped put this show together. In the meantime, till tomorrow night, Deus Tiamat, and I do too.